Welcome to the East County Magazine Live Radio Show, the voice of East County, bringing you the hottest news and coolest events from the communities of San Diego's East County. We're your community radio, representing the public interest, not special interests. Broadcasting from the heart of East County in Descanso with your host, Miriam Raftery.
This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we open with some hot politics, the latest on the U.S. Senate debate in California and the presidential primaries, as well as one major candidate who has announced a running mate. Then on our Capitol Report, we'll tell you about a Supreme Court decision protecting political speech for public employees. We'll also tell you about efforts in Sacramento to ban smoking, including medical marijuana, on college campuses statewide. We have a report on a missing woman from the San Diego Police Department and some information on Earthquake Safety Month. And then we'll have a special report on a rocky road for the homeless in San Diego that's generating outrage among advocates for the homeless. On our Green Scene report, we'll tell you about a major land acquisition in East County by the Backcountry Land Trust. And if you need free legal help, we'll tell you where you can find it on Law Day coming up in East County. Then on Destination, we'll have information on all the top festivals and events coming up, from a Western-style roundup to the Coyote Music Festival. We've got some important health warnings for you today, including findings that rice food is being linked to high arsenic levels in babies. We'll also tell you about a vegetable recall linked to listeria, a potentially fatal disease. On the second half of our show today, our newsmaker interview is with SDG&E Representative Amber Albrecht, and she's going to be telling us about a major innovation that SDG&E has come up with to help people go solar without having to upgrade your electrical panel. Then on Bookshelf, we'll be re-airing our interview with Zoe Garimani. We'll take you on the road to the Desert View Tower out in Hukumba. And on Vines and Wines, we'll tell you about some award-winning winemakers right here in Ramona. So stay tuned for today's edition of the East County Magazine Radio Show, where East County matters. California Senator Barbara Boxer's upcoming retirement has opened up a free-for-all in the race to replace her. The ballot will have 34 names on it, and on Monday, the top five of those contenders took stage for a debate co-sponsored by KCRA-TV and the University of the Pacific. Attorney General Kamala Harris is heavily favored to win the race, having the endorsement of the Democratic Party in a state with only 28% of voters registered as Republicans. The real question is who her opponent will be in November after the June 7th primary narrows the race to the two top contenders. The others in the debate included Orange County Congresswoman Loretta Sanchez, a Democrat, as well as two former California Republican Party chairmen, Tom Del Beccaro and Duff Sundheim, as well as Republican software developer Ron Unz. Both Harris and Sanchez talked about the need for affordable college education. Both support a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants. Harris faulted Sanchez for anti-Muslim rhetoric, a reference to Sanchez's statement about the San Bernardino terror attacks, indicating she believed up to 20% of Muslims support an Islamic caliphate state. Sanchez, who serves on the House Homeland Security and Armed Services Committee, touted her anti-war vote on Iraq. "I'll use everything before we have to go to war with anybody." Del Beccaro, by contrast, said the U.S. should have done more to intervene militarily in Iraq and Syria. Sundheim strayed from his party's hard line on immigration, indicating that while he supports beefing up border security, he would also support a pathway to citizenship for undocumented immigrants already in the U.S. Republicans clashed on Wall Street reforms. Unz stated, "I think we have to crack down on Wall Street, just like Bernie Sanders is saying." But Del Beccaro disagreed. "I'm not at all concerned about Wall Street and the rich," he said. Unz indicated that he supports raising the minimum wage, while De Beccaro opposes doing so. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery.
This is Jonathan Goetz with the outcomes of the Northeastern presidential primaries held this week. Voters in Connecticut, Delaware, Maryland, Pennsylvania, and Rhode Island went to the polls on Tuesday to help select the Republican and Democratic candidates for president. Both frontrunners added handily to their delegate count, with business and reality TV celebrity Donald Trump sweeping all five northeastern states and former Secretary of State Hillary Clinton winning 4 out of 5. Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders won the Democratic primary in Rhode Island. Texas Senator Ted Cruz conceded the evening before polls even closed. Cruz is now mathematically eliminated from winning the Republican nomination on the first ballot at the GOP convention in July. Trump won at least 60% of Republican votes cast in Delaware and Rhode Island, 55% in Connecticut and Pennsylvania, and 54% in Maryland. Ohio Governor John Kasich finished second place in each contest, except Pennsylvania, where Cruz took the number two spot. Across all contests, Trump picked up 109 pledged delegates. In addition, CNN reports that at least 27 of the 54 unpledged Republican delegates elected in Pennsylvania on Tuesday are Trump supporters. Rhode Island awarded John Kasich 5 delegates and Ted Cruz 3, with none of the other 4 contests awarding delegates to either Cruz or Kasich. On the Democratic side, Clinton added at least 209 delegates to her count and Sanders at least 146. Tuesday's results greatly reduced the likelihood of a contested Republican convention. With his strong showing and near-delegate sweep, Trump is finally on track to receive all 1,237 delegates he needs at Cleveland's Republican National Convention in July on the first round of voting. This is important since most of the party loyalist delegates become unpledged on the second round of voting, free to vote for whomever they wish. Trump declared he now considers himself the presumptive nominee. Indiana is seen as the last reasonable chance to stop Trump because its 57 Republican delegates are awarded on a winner-take-all basis. Trump and Clinton have narrow leads in the Hoosier state. Although the map ahead favors Cruz, CNN reports that Trump only needs 251 of the remaining 502 delegates yet to be awarded in order to win the nomination on the first round of voting. Clinton's victory speech made it clear that she is a polished public speaker. She said, "We want America to be in the future business," a veiled critique of both the Republican Party and Trump's Make America Great Again slogan. She called for an American clean energy superpower that facilitated a prosperous, inclusive, decent society. She also spent a good deal of time praising Bernie Sanders on a number of issues, including healthcare, Wall Street reform, and education. Sanders has vowed to stay in the race through the convention, saying, "The answer is, we are in this race until the last vote is cast," adding, "The people of California have a right to determine who they want to see as president of the United States and what kind of agenda they want the Democratic Party to have."
The most unconventional presidential primary race in recent memory just got even more so. Texas Senator Ted Cruz, one day after being mathematically eliminated from getting enough delegates to beat Donald Trump on the first ballot at the Republican convention, announced that if he wins the nomination, Carly Fiorina will be his running mate. Fiorina is the former Hewlett-Packard CEO who previously ran for both president and U.S. Senate in California. Both Cruz and Fiorina are fiscal and social conservatives. Cruz praised Fiorina as an extraordinary leader and said their ticket is about the future. Fiorina told the crowd in Indiana, which heads to the polls next, "I've had tough fights in my life," adding that tough fights don't faze me one bit. The fight ahead looms tough indeed. If Trump secures enough delegates to win on the first vote, barring an unprecedented rule change at the convention, Trump will be the Republican nominee. If Cruz can block Trump from securing the magic number needed to win on the first ballot, however, delegates would be free on a second ballot to vote for whomever they wish, opening the door for a Cruz-Fiorina ticket to persuade delegates to shift allegiances from Trump. The choice is odd in one respect. California has the most delegates of any state yet to vote in the primary. But Senator Barbara Boxer beat Fiorina by a substantial margin in Fiorina's failed 2010 Senate run. Boxer issued a statement poking criticism at her former rival. She said, "I think the most apt description of that team would be mean and meaner. He wants to ship immigrants out of America, and she's already shipped jobs out of America." Boxer added that she predicts the Fiorina merger with Cruz will be, quote, "just as successful as her last one at HP," a reference to a troubled merger that led to Fiorina's ouster from HP. Boxer noted that after losing her California Senate race, Fiorina moved out of the state. But Republican strategist Beth Miller, who served as an advisor to Fiorina in her 2010 Senate race, told the Sacramento Bee that Fiorina connects well with people and suggested that she could add momentum to the Cruz campaign. However, former House Speaker John Boehner, a Republican who served in Congress with Cruz, issued the antithesis of an endorsement this week. During a visit to Stanford University, former Speaker Boehner called Cruz, quote, "Lucifer in the flesh," unquote, and said that he will not vote for Cruz if he wins the Republican nomination. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Miriam Raftery. This is East County Magazine's Capitol Report, bringing you the latest news and newsmakers from our nation's capital. If you're a public employee, you can't be fired or demoted for supporting a political candidate that your boss doesn't like. By a 6-2 decision, the U.S. Supreme Court issued a decision strengthening free speech protections for 22 million public employees nationwide. Justice Stephen Breyer, writing for the majority, concluded the Constitution prohibits a government employee from discharging or demoting an employee because the employee supports a particular political candidate. Justices Samuel Alito and Clarence Thomas dissented. The case centered around a New Jersey police detective, Jeffrey Heffernan, who was fired after his supervisor saw him loading a campaign sign in his car for the mayor's opponent. Heffernan said the signs were for his mother, an invalid, but he lost his job anyway, and an appellate court had ruled that he could not sue under First Amendment rights since he was fired for a mistaken impression when he wasn't actually supporting the candidate. But the Supreme Court ruled that what matters is the employer's motive, and in this case, the employer believed the officer was exercising his freedom of expression and retaliated against him for that perception. Reporting for East County Magazine, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
The California Assembly has approved Assembly Bill 1594, a measure touted as banning smoking and vaping on all California State University and community college campuses statewide. Smoking is already banned at the University of California. But as written, AB 1594 also appears to outlaw smoking marijuana, including medical marijuana, even in the privacy of one's dorm room or vehicle on campus. The measure would ban smoking of tobacco or any other plant product, whether natural or synthetic, including inhalation through pipes, hookahs, cigars, electronic cigarettes, or other devices. California voters approved medical marijuana over a decade ago as a constitutional amendment. So would banning students' access to medical marijuana pose constitutional challenges? Could this put health at risk if a student takes such medication to prevent seizures or ease nausea from chemotherapy? The bill passed by a 41-23 vote on Monday, with local Assemblymember Shirley Weber voting for it and Brian Jones against. It is unclear, however, whether the members were aware of the language including medical marijuana, since the bill's analysis and media reports make no mention of this. The bill's author, Assemblyman Kevin McCarty, has said his bill will promote a safe, healthy environment for students to learn. Supporters have largely come from the pro-tobacco camp, with little or no attention being paid to the impact on medical marijuana patients. A measure to legalize recreational marijuana is expected to come before voters in November. If it passes, legislators could still presumably restrict where recreational marijuana could be smoked, just as smoking tobacco products are already restricted in public places, including some public colleges and universities currently. But if voters grant California students the freedom to smoke marijuana recreationally, banning such newfound freedom on college campuses may prove wildly unpopular with students and push pot-smoking college kids into other public places such as parks or beaches. Unlike tobacco, which has no medicinal value, marijuana is increasingly recognized by medical professionals for its effectiveness in treating conditions from glaucoma to epilepsy. So just where should the line be drawn between protecting students' health from smoke inhalation versus jeopardizing the health of other students by restricting access to a lawful medication? If AB 1594 passes the state Senate and is signed into law by the governor, the next action may well be court challenges on constitutional grounds. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Leon Thompson.
San Diego police have issued an urgent bulletin seeking public help to find a missing woman considered at risk. Christina Konej was last seen driving a gray Ford Focus with California license plates 3FPA359. She is 46 years old, Latina, 5 feet 6 inches tall, and weighs about 120 pounds. The bulletin was issued Tuesday night. No photo or additional information has yet been provided. If you have information about her whereabouts, please call the San Diego Police Department at 619-531-2000.
It's time to rock and roll, and we're not talking about a music festival. California is overdue for a major earthquake, and now is the time to prepare. April has been declared Earthquake Preparedness Month by the Governor's Office of Emergency Services. Here are some tips on what to do before, during, and after a big quake. Before an earthquake, make sure you have a fire extinguisher, first aid kit, a battery-powered radio, a flashlight, and extra batteries at home. Also, learn first aid techniques. Be prepared for up to 72 hours afterward with food, water, and supplies. Keep your cell phone charged and have an extra battery. Know how to turn off your gas, water, and electricity. Make plans where to meet your family and neighbors after a quake. Invest in earthquake insurance and keep a copy of your policy handy along with emergency contact numbers. Don't leave heavy objects on shelves since they can fall during a quake. Anchor heavy furniture, cupboards, and appliances to the walls or floor. During an earthquake, stay calm. If you're indoors, stay inside. If you're outside, stay out there. If you're indoors, stand against a wall near the center of a building or in a doorway, or crawl under heavy furniture such as a desk or table. Stay away from windows that could shatter. Don't use matches or candles. If gas lines are broken, any flame can cause an explosion. If you're in a car, stop the car and stay inside until the earthquake stops. Don't use elevators because they can get stuck. Avoid bridges or anything that could collapse. After an earthquake, check yourself and others for injuries. Provide first aid for anyone who needs it. Check water, gas, and electric lines. If any are damaged, shut off the valves. Do not touch any downed lines. Check for the smell of gas. Call your utility company if you have a leak. Turn on the radio. Don't use the phone unless it's an emergency. Stay out of damaged buildings and away from damaged areas. Be careful around broken glass and debris. Wear boots or sturdy shoes to protect your feet and expect aftershocks. Remember, it's not a matter of if an earthquake strikes, but when. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Ed Barrena.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
San Diego Mayor Kevin Faulkner is being rocked by criticism after a homeless advocacy group posted photos on Facebook of sharp, jagged rocks installed by the city under an overpass where homeless people had been sleeping and taking shelter during storms. San Diego has one of the highest homeless populations in the nation, but has no year-round homeless shelter. The city has recently been conducting sweeps to confiscate the belongings of homeless individuals. Homelessness News posted pictures of the rocks on its Facebook page and urged people to contact Mayor Faulkner and let him know that, quote, the current criminalization and anti-homeless policies that are being deployed are the wrong way. Bill Harris, the city's supervising public information officer, has offered this explanation. The new landscaping along Imperial Avenue is meant to address safety concerns by neighborhood residents in Sherman Heights, CityBeat reports that he said. Kevin Inman posted that he lives a block from the site. He says they've had the police and paramedics out many times because of the camps, adding, there are no easy solutions. As a community, we need to invest tens of millions of dollars to offer support services, but where is the political will? Instead, there is talk of spending $1 billion on a football stadium right in this exact spot. Many voiced outrage at the action. Lori Saldana, who is running for mayor against Faulkner, has blasted Faulkner for taking punitive action against the homeless instead of offering solutions. She posted a video online showing a homeless encampment under the bridge under I-5 taken during a storm shortly before the rocks were installed. Jeannie Crescenzo of Amicus, an advocacy group for the homeless, delivered a shopping cart filled with faux rocks to the mayor's office in protest of the decision. Tell the mayor we want real shelter and housing solutions, not sweeps and rock beds, she said. Crescenzo has launched a petition that's gotten about 9,000 signatures so far, asking the mayor to allow construction of small houses on vacant lots to provide a clean, safe place for homeless people to live. But so far, Faulkner has not responded to the petition. Many posted comments urging the city to spend money on shelters and services for the homeless instead of punitive measures meant to harm them. After our story ran on East County Magazine, one of our readers called the city's actions heartbreaking, adding, our homeless are human beings, not to be treated like pigeons who land on billboards or rooftops to be shooed away by pointies. I would absolutely love to see how much money it costs to acquire the materials, pay the laborers to install the rocks, and maintain the trash removal that will now be necessary. Compare that to efforts to assist the homeless. Disgusting, our reader wrote. Another local reader observed that the city of La Mesa recently placed similar sharp rocks along a median on La Mesa Boulevard in an apparent effort to stop panhandlers from standing at the side asking motorists for money. Patty Mooney, another of our readers, observed that a high percentage of the homeless locally are veterans. She said, this policy of sharp rocks positioned right where a war hero might want to lie down to rest is inhumane. She called the rocks shameful and urged cities to step up and create humane solutions to the homelessness problem. Michael McConnell, whose post for Homelessness News San Diego alerted the public to this issue, calls the rock San Diego installed dangerous. He says the city has created a garbage trap while failing to offer any meaningful solutions to the homeless situation in San Diego, where housing prices have soared, even as the homeless population has climbed to the fourth highest in the United States. Reporting for East County Magazine on KNSJ, the Network for Social Justice, this is Miriam Raftery.
Now it's time for the Green Scene Report, highlighting energy, environmental, and sustainability issues in our community.
This is Miriam Raftery with a Green Scene Report. The Backcountry Land Trust has acquired 764 acres at Clover Flat in La Posta to be preserved for posterity. The $6 million acquisition was funded by SANDAG, the U.S. Navy, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service, Trust for Public Land, the California Wildlife Conservation Board, and Backcountry Land Trust. George Barnett, president of the Backcountry Land Trust, says the deal also includes $120,000 in funds for remediation and management endowment fund. The group also recently acquired 230 acres at Wrights Field Preserve in Alpine, bringing the total acreage owned or managed by Backcountry Land Trust to over 4,500 acres in the southern portion of East County, lands valued at nearly $14 million, now open and dedicated to the public's enjoyment.
The Foothills Barn Association is organizing Law Day, an opportunity for the public to meet with lawyers in the community who provide services in various areas of law. The Free Legal Services Clinic will be held on Monday, May 2nd, from 2 o'clock p.m. to 4 o'clock p.m. at the El Cajon Library. The event is held once a year and is a unique opportunity for the public to receive free legal counseling. Attendees can consult with lawyers in a variety of areas, including family law, criminal law, probate, trusts, estates, landlord and tenant, general civil and civil harassment orders, and more. For more information on Law Day coming up on May 2nd, you can call 619-531-3900. Reported for East County Magazine on KNSJ, this is Liz Alpert.
Welcome to Destination East County with your host, Rebecca Williamson.
And Leon Thompson. Bringing you the top festivals, events, and attractions across East County
each week.
This week's Destination East County includes Cinco de Mayo festivities, an Arbor Day celebration, theatrical performances, and more.
Plus, we'll have a preview of coming attractions, including the opening of El Cajon's Dinner and a Concert series, cowboy competitions at the Campo Roundup, Rihanna in concert, SDSU, and A Taste of Julian.
So stay tuned for all of these events and more.
The City of El Cajon invites the public to an Arbor Day celebration on Saturday, April 30th at 8 a.m. in Hillside Park on Buena Terrace. The city will be giving away free tree seedlings and light refreshments as they commemorate the city's 18th year of receiving the Tree City USA Award.
The Waits, an acoustic duo on guitar and mandolin, will be performing May 30th at 7 p.m. in San Pasquale's Winery's La Mesa Village Wine Bar and Gallery. Singing and playing in harmony, the pair will perform a blend of folk, bluegrass, country, classic rock, and more. For details, visit sanpasqualewinery.com.
Cinco de Mayo celebrates the Battle of Puebla, in which Mexican troops prevailed over French forces on May 5th in 1862. Mexican soldiers, greatly outnumbered, defeated the army that was thought to be the most powerful in the world. Though it did not stop the French from taking control of Mexico, the victory boosted the nation's morale and determination to fight the invasion. Diane Powers started Old Town's first Cinco de Mayo celebration back in 1983. Today, she continues that celebratory tradition at her Casa de Pico restaurant, now located in La Mesa at Grossmont Center, May 5th through 7th, with lively revelries, folkloric dancers, strolling mariachis, food and drink specials.
A Cinco de Mayo classic cruise night will be held May 4th in downtown El Cajon, featuring music by Flamingo with Roots and classic cars, including Low Riders from 5 to 8 p.m., For details, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Young Actors Theater in Spring Valley will present Once Upon a Mattress, opening May 4th and running through May 14th. This musical production is based on the Hans Christian Andersen tale, The Princess and the Pea. For tickets and details, visit yatsandiego.org. Now for a preview of coming attractions.
Dinner and a Concert, opening night at the Prescott Promenade on Main Street in downtown El Cajon, kicks off Friday, May 6th with Clay Colton playing country rock. You can enjoy music and dancing every Friday night from 6 to 8 p.m. from May 6th through October 7th. Bring a picnic or have dinner at one of the many restaurants in downtown El Cajon. For a complete lineup of concerts, you can visit downtownelcajon.com.
Relive the Wild West at the 10th Annual Campo Roundup on Saturday, May 7th at the Camp Lockett Event and Equestrian Facility in Campo. Gates open at 7 a.m. with opening ceremonies at 9:30 a.m. Witness how cowboys ride, rope, and brand cattle. Activities also include a gymkhana competition, western skits, and gunfighting reenactments of the famed Campo Shootout, mutton busting, kids' games, hay rides, a Miss Roundup competition, and a raffle. Period costumes are welcome. For more information, you can visit campoceleef.org/roundup.
The Coyote Music Festival returns to Cuyamaca College on Saturday, May 7th, starting at 12 noon at Cuyamaca College's Grand Lawn in Rancho San Diego. Now in its eighth year, the entirely student-run festival provides the community with an afternoon of live outdoor music. The festival also culminates a semester's worth of work for students studying music, technology, recording, and business. For details on this event, you can go to cuyamaca.edu.
Quirky and fun, Hakumba Hot Springs Community-Wide Yard Sale takes place on Saturday, May 7th from 9 a.m. to 2 p.m., Old Highway 80 and Railroad Station. Besides shopping for yard sale finds and pursuing handmade arts and craft items, you can also take a ride in a flying saucer for a unique photo opportunity or tour the Chinese castle where rumors swirl about its infamous past. Was the castle a gift from a sea captain to his bride? Did a murder once occur there? Is there a smuggler's tunnel to Mexico? You can find out facts versus fiction on this tour on May 7th.
Rihanna is one of the best-selling artists of all time, and she'll be performing live in concert at the Viejas Arena at San Diego State University on May 9th. Rihanna is the youngest solo artist to earn 14 number one singles on the Billboard Hot 100. She's won 8 Grammy Awards, 8 American Music Awards, 23 Billboard Music Awards, and received the inaugural Icon Award at the American Music Awards in 2013. For tickets and details, you can Google Viejas Arena at SDSU.
The 8th Annual Taste of Julian, a rural dining adventure, will be held on May 9th from 1 until 5 p.m. This self-guided culinary tour includes one-of-a-kind restaurants, wineries, and breweries. For more information, you can visit julianca.com. For a list of participating restaurants and tickets, visit the event website at julianca.com.
You're invited to a party to benefit the Alpine Community Center on Friday, May 13th from 6 to 10 p.m. This event includes a ribeye steak dinner, art show, live jazz, blues, and swing music by Chet and the Committee, hosted by the Alpine Community Center and co-sponsored by the Alpine Mountain Empire Chamber of Commerce. For tickets, you can RSVP to 619-445-7330.
The San Diego Laurel and Hardy Group, Saps at Sea, will present Laurel and Hardy Weekly Western Night on Saturday, May 14th at Trinity Church in Spring Valley. Doors open at 6:30 with showtime at 7 p.m. The program includes such cinematic gems as A Car Punching Cartoon, West of Hot Dog, The Last Chance Saloon, Horse Callers, and Way Out West. You can also savor barbecue beans and cornbread during intermission. That's all for this week. You can find details on all these events and more on our calendar and in our festivals and events section online at eastcountymagazine.org.
If you have an event you'd like added to our calendar, or if you would like to sponsor the Destination East County column on our website, or the Destination East County show on KNSJ Radio, you can contact editor at eastcountymagazine.org. Destination East County is the most read feature on our website.
We'll be back next week with more festivals, events, and attractions in San Diego's East County.
See you around, East County.
This is Ed Barreno with the Health Report. Earlier this month, the U.S. Food and Drug Administration, or FDA, and the American Society of Pediatrics have issued new guidelines for parents recommending limits on inorganic arsenic in rice baby foods. The FDA also recommends that parents feed babies a variety of cereals, such as oatmeal and barley, but stops short of recommending elimination of rice, a common first solid food for many young children. Now, a study published by the journal JAMA Pediatrics on April 25th reports that babies who ate food with rice or rice-based snacks had arsenic levels nearly double those of babies who did not eat rice products. Lead researcher Margaret Carrigus at Dartmouth University's Geisel School of Medicine in New Hampshire has said the arsenic levels measured in urine increased with the amount of rice foods that the youngsters consumed. Arsenic is a carcinogen that causes cancer as well as contributing to heart disease. It can also affect a child's immune system and intellectual development, according to the FDA and study authors. Inorganic arsenic has also been found in apple juice and applesauce for infants due to pesticides sprayed on these crops. So mixing apple juice into rice cereal could amplify the exposure. The study looked at over 750 infants who were fed rice cereal, white or brown rice, foods made with rice, and foods sweetened with brown rice syrup. Avoiding these products or choosing organic versions, which by law cannot contain pesticides, are options for parents to protect their baby's health. For those serving whole rice, which can absorb arsenic from pesticides, cooking the rice in excess water and draining off the liquid can reduce arsenic content by 40 to 60%.
This is Miriam Raftery with an important health alert. Several brands of frozen peas, corn, and mixed vegetables have been recalled from stores across California due to possible contamination with listeria, which can cause serious and sometimes fatal infections, particularly in young children and the elderly, or those who are immune compromised. The bacteria can also cause miscarriages and stillbirths, according to the U.S. Food and Drug Administration. 15 vegetable items sold at major retailers across California and the nation are voluntarily being recalled by CRF Foods of Pasco, Washington. The brands recalled include True Goodness by Meijer, Wellesley Farms Organic, Organic by Nature, and Schwann's. Consumers can return these recalled products to retailers for a full refund. For details, you can visit fda.gov/safety/recalls.
You're listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, networking for social justice.
The East County Magazine Show airs Mondays and Fridays on KNSJ from 5 o'clock to 6 o'clock p.m. You can listen live at 89.1 FM or online at knsj.org. You can also listen anywhere by downloading the TuneIn application for your smartphone. For details, visit tunein.com. The East County Magazine Show on KNSJ Radio is produced by the nonprofit Heartland Coalition. We're your community news. We reflect your interest, not special interest. You can get involved by volunteering, get trained to be a citizen journalist, and support East County Magazine at www.eastcountymagazine.org. And you can send your news tips and story ideas to editor@eastcountymagazine.org. Now stay tuned for part two of the East County Magazine radio show. Now, straight from the headlines, bringing you our latest top newsmakers. This is Miriam Raftery with the East County Magazine show on KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, recording at our Hideaway studio in East County. Today we're going to be talking about how you can save money by going solar. And our very special guest is Amber Albrecht from SDG&E. Amber, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Now, full disclosure, listeners, SDG&E has been a sponsor of our East County Magazine's Wildfire and Emergency Alerts. We certainly thank them for that. But we are here today to talk about an entirely different issue. So, Amber, tell us a little bit about the renewable meter adapter that was invented by SDG&E.
We have invented the renewable meter adapter to help customers save on their cost to install solar. Mm-hmm. So this device was the brainchild of two of our employees who back in 2012 recognized that one of the barriers to going solar were electrical panel upgrades because mm-hmm. they could take a lot of time, they required additional permitting, and they also could results in a much higher cost, from $2,500 to $10,000 in costs.
Yeah, you have to rip out your stucco and redo your landscaping sometimes, all kinds of expensive upgrades, new wiring and all that.
Yes, it could require extensive trench work, rematching the paint on your house. And again, it was a lot of time. What we were seeing in 2012 was that electric panel upgrades were really becoming a barrier for our customers pursuing solar because it took a lot of time, it required additional permits, and the costs are really high. And it also included potential damage to your home, having to replace stucco, a lot of trench work, uprooting your landscaping. So it was a problem we wanted to solve for our customers.
Yeah, that can get very expensive and also very time consuming, which delays the whole process. So I understand it was your customer generation manager, Ken Parks, who invented this along with another gentleman.
Mike Colburn, yes.
Mike Colburn, very good. Now, who is eligible for this? In other words, it's not newer homes, it's only the older homes. Is that correct?
The renewable meter adapter is really solving the electrical panel upgrade roadblock, which applies to homes built before 1995, typically. Any home that has an electric service panel below 200 amps, which is required to accommodate solar safely on a home.
Yeah, and that's about 3/4 of all of the houses in San Diego County. So that's a pretty big market out there.
It is, and we're seeing a lot of customers already taking advantage of this. We introduced it in August.
Yeah, August of last year. Now, how many people have signed up for it?
About 3,000 people have already had the renewable meter adapter installed.
Mm-hmm. And how much money have they saved?
That results in a cumulative savings of $3 million on cost avoided to go solar. And beyond that, it really shrinks the time to go solar because the process of panel upgrades was taking about 4 to 6 weeks.
Yeah.
Now you can get this device installed in as little as 30 minutes, and you just need to call us about a week before to reserve it.
That sounds great. You know, sometimes things utility companies do are controversial, but this doesn't sound like it's one of them. We've certainly seen a lot of praise for this new program, this new invention, coming from the solar industry itself, solar companies, as well as from some of the progressive members of the San Diego City Council who were speaking out about it. So it's really a pretty exciting thing. I understand it can also reduce safety risks. Tell us about that.
When a contractor or an electrician is upgrading an electrical panel, it just comes with inherent safety risks, which is why previously customers would have to take a 24 to 48 hour potentially outage from the energy company in order to safely do this work. So it really avoids all of that.
Yeah, that's another good thing. Now, who maintains this, and is there any ongoing cost once you've installed this thing?
Customers who are looking at solar and need an electric panel upgrade can instead purchase the renewable meter adapter mm-hmm. for $1,326, mm-hmm. and that's the only cost. Beyond that, SDG&E maintains the equipment for the life of the product.
And there's no cost for the maintenance?
No, there's no cost
associated
with that.
So you don't have to worry about any hidden cost increase or anything?
No, there's no hidden cost. It's just $1,326.
And compared to an electrical panel upgrade, if you had to do that, which would have been the only option before this invention, how much more money would that run?
On the low side, really just for the electrical work, it's about $2,500. When you add in potential landscape, stucco repair, it can be upwards of $10,000.
Yeah. So that's a lot of money saved. Now, in addition to the renewable meter adapter, I understand SDG&E has a fast track option for people who want to go solar quickly. Tell us how that works.
Yes. If you are installing solar on your rooftop, talk to your solar installer about SDG&E's online fast track process. And with that, you can get your panels interconnected to the grid within 24 hours of the city inspector signing off and deeming them safe.
Very good. If people who are listening out there are interested in learning more about this or perhaps even signing up to get the renewable meter adapter or the fast track program, where can they go?
Visit sdge.com/RMA.
Very good. And that again stands for renewable meter adapter. We have been speaking, listeners, if you just tuned in, with Amber Albrecht, a representative from San Diego Gas and Electric Company, or better known as SDG&E. I want to thank you for joining us today on the East County Magazine Show on KNSJ.
You are listening to KNSJ 89.1 FM Descanso, broadcasting from the desert to the sea.
Welcome to Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read. My name is Raina Menashe, and I'll be your host for this segment. Today I'm interviewing Dr. Zore Garamani. My guest is the author of the novels The Moon Daughter
Sky of Red Poppies, which was translated into French and Persian, and The Commiserator, which is in Persian. Her work has received awards from the California Stories, KPBS One Book, One San Diego, and San Diego Book Awards. In addition, she has participated in a number of anthologies, including Tremors, New Fiction by Iranian American Writers, A Year in Ink, and The Poetry of Iranian Women. Welcome, Dr. Garamani. It's a pleasure having you on our show.
Thank you, and please call me Zoe.
Okay. Welcome, Zoe. Let's start with your new novel, The Moon Daughter. Give us a little teaser about this book, what motivated you to write it.
My first book, which you spoke of, had answered a lot of social, maybe some political questions, and altogether it was a glimpse into the past 40 years of Iran. So its success, surprising and thrilling as it was, would not guarantee that people necessarily like my writing. So obviously I was nervous about my second book because this one is purely fiction.
Sure.
But I will always want to write what I know more than other people know about, or what we say that in writing, as you know, write what you know best. And what I know best will always have a touch of Persian culture in it, because it was Iran where I was born and raised, and even though I have lived 40 years here, mm-hmm. my Iranian-ness will always be there, as you can hear it in my voice and accent. So this book is about a mother and a daughter. I always give my books a universal theme so readers of all walks of life can find something to relate to. And I wrote about an immigrant mother who, mm-hmm. her story is the first part of the book, and it's told in third person. And then I flip the coin and tell the rest of the story from the daughter's point of view, who is a lawyer, American raised, and very much an American.
Right.
So in that way, I have achieved two goals. One is to introduce part of the culture and the cultural differences, and also to bring it full circle to a resolution of what may or may not happen to immigrant families. And it is a universal story in that, in this story, the woman is Iranian, but we are a society of mixed cultures. And often that mixed culture presents a problem between parents and their children.
Yes.
So that story is touched on. And it's about women's rights in the Middle East.
And those really are universal themes, aren't they?
Exactly.
Your award-winning novel, Sky of Red Poppies, is about two girls coming of age in Iran during the 60s. Talk a little bit about the social differences in Iran that you shared through your book.
For those who are familiar with the book, they know I have tried to make my pen into a camera and go back to 40 years of life there. And like every society, there are many differences culturally, not so much cultural, but economically, religiously, politically. There are differences. Yet one thing that we all shared was that we went to an all-girls school where you were required to wear a denim uniform. Mm-hmm. And once everybody wears that uniform, those social classes are masked.
Right.
It was only after school where these two friends show how different they are. One comes from a fundamental religious family. She's an activist. She's an intellectual. And the other one is an ordinary girl like I am, who just gets educated and her family is well-to-do and they can send her abroad, and she ends up abroad and never gets involved in anything. So then the one who is not involved tells the story of the one who was involved.
Ah.
And then it comes again full circle after 40 years into the story of a friendship and its redeeming powers.
So it's like very optimistic themes.
I never lose hope. And even though there are sad parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
There's always hope.
Well, I know, obviously, immigration and the experiences, the generational changes, and friendship are big themes for you. I guess that's why you've been called the voice of the Iranian-American diaspora. What does that phrase mean to you, and how does it drive your work?
I'm glad to hear this. I had never heard
really?
People call me that.
I read it.
I have heard many other voices who are much stronger voices in diaspora, but maybe I am the naive voice in diaspora because I have never been involved in any activities. I've never had a clear political view.
Mm-hmm.
But I believe that this country is, rather than being a melting pot, it is a collage.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody really melts.
Right.
People keep their identities and come together in the most beautiful way and create a society that is unique.
Mm-hmm.
Each person brings their good traits into it and tries to shed the traits that are not so desirable. And that makes us a better society. So my gift, my 2 cents worth of this being part of this collage and being for the past 40 years
mm-hmm.
included in this beautiful society, my gift to it is to represent my culture in the best way that I know.
Mm-hmm. And how have you changed during this process, this 40-year process? I mean, how is your cultural beliefs or your identity changed?
When I moved here in 75, I knew it was for good. That was years before any revolution had happened in Iran, years before restrictions were imposed on women. And I had to sit down and think, if this is where I am going to live for the rest of my life, I might as well blend in with the society. So I accepted the American culture right from day one.
Wow.
And never argued. I bragged about the fact that I make one of the best apple pies you could taste. rather than force my own culture on my children, I raised 3 of the best Americans I know, and they each in their own field are an asset to their society. And 2 of them don't even understand or speak a word of Persian, but that is not their duty to do. If they want to do it, they can always do it, and I'll be happy to help them. But that is my language, my mm-hmm. culture, and they can only pick it up if they want to. I will not push it at them.
Is there anything that you miss the most about your culture?
There's a lot. Mm-hmm. There's, above everything else, the unconditional love that I received while I lived in Iran, and I will never receive it anywhere else.
Mm.
And I have friends of all walks of society, but sometimes when it's put to test, I see that we Iranians are a bit crazy about friendship. We just go that extra mile. And I miss being surrounded by people who would go that extra mile. I do miss being recognized, being known in my mm-hmm. small town.
It's having a smaller society.
Exactly. Well, even if it's not small, once you do something good, you're a good student or you're a good writer,
see.
You become known by people.
Okay.
Here, everybody is living their own lives and it's more private.
The individualism.
Individualism. I don't even know some of my neighbors, and I've lived on the same dead-end street for 14 years. So if this was back in Iran, I would have been friends with most of them. We would know each other maybe by first name, you mm-hmm. know. And I do have very good neighbors that I do know. I'm not saying that everyone is like that. But that intimacy is what I miss the most. And the emotional, poetic way that they speak from day to day, even on an everyday, even an illiterate person knows hundreds of verses by heart. That I miss very much.
Interesting. So that brings me to my next question, which is about the Iranian-American community in San Diego. Is there a strong community as such, and how do you participate in it?
There's a very strong community. I believe the last someone told me there are 68,000 Iranian-Americans in San Diego. And there are many wonderful organizations. There's the Persian Cultural Center. There's the House of Iran in Balboa mm-hmm. Park. There's the Association of Iranian Professionals, numerous societies. And while I am a member of some of those and help here and there when I am asked to help, I am not 100% active in any of those because I have so many other volunteer works. I am much more diligent about being a friend of the Central Library than I am as a member of the PCC. So I do consider this my general big society, my big community, rather than focus on a smaller group just because we came from the same country.
I understand. Let's move to Sky of Red Poppies, which I know is on the reading list of many high schools and colleges. You've also had hundreds of articles and short stories appearing in U.S. and foreign publications. You've been successful. To what do you attribute your success, and do you have any advice for all those scribblers out there listening?
Yes. I, first of all, it is true that luck has a lot to do with it. I owe my success to the San Diego readers. Mm. I could have published this book while I lived in Chicago, and none of this may have happened. There's a certain warmth and certain thirst for culture and knowing more among San Diegans that I've never seen anywhere else.
Really?
And I also was lucky that mm-hmm. apparently my book, as soon as it came out, fell in the right hands and was represented right. by the right readers. So a lot of it has to do with luck. I'm not going to, even after 3 years, I am not going to let it get into my head to say, hey, here I am, the great writer they discovered. No, here I am, the lucky writer who was discovered. And I do hope more and more of my colleagues will be discovered in the same way, and I wish them well. But my advice would be never give up. Never, ever give up, because you're the one who brings the success about.
That's wonderful advice. Just one brief question to finish up. What are you writing next?
My next novel is titled The Basement. When I wrote Sky of Red Poppies, people asked me if there was a sequel to it. And I said no, because that story ended. It's that duration of time when major changes happen. And then I read The Help, which is about the domestic help. And I thought, oh my God, is there a story about the domestic help in Iran? Oh. So this, I play with the word basement, because not only did the staff live in the basement of the house, but they were the foundation of the many of the changes to come. So the word basement appealed to me. And in there, you will meet a lot of the characters that you have already met in Great. Sky of Red Poppies.
And when will this book come out?
I hope by the end of the year, but you know how it is.
That's right. Well, we'll look forward to it. Our time is up, Zoe, but thank you again for joining us.
Thank you so much for inviting me. It's been a pleasure, and I'm so glad to tell you that the blurb that East County Magazine wrote, something that East County Magazine wrote in their review, Dennis Moore wrote that, now appears on the back cover of the French edition of my book.
Yeah, that's wonderful. Well, thank you again. And for more information on Zoe Garamani and her work, please visit her website at www.zoegaramani.com. And let me spell that. It's Zoegahremani. Again, this is Raina Menashe, and you have been listening to East County Magazine's Bookshelf, bringing you stories of local literary luminaries and some great books to read.
We're on the road in East County, visiting some amazing towns and meeting some incredible people across our region. Welcome to another adventure on East County Magazine's On the Road.
This is Hayden Parsley, on the road in Hucumba Hot Springs for East County Magazine. You can take a trip into California's past at the Desert View Tower, a quirky and whimsical relic of the past that is still open to the public here in San Diego's East County. Located just off Interstate 8 at the Incapa exit, the tower is poised on a rocky overlook surrounded by desert on all sides. Built in the 1920s by Bert Vaughn, a real estate tycoon who owned much of Hucumba, this 70-foot watchtower has become a tourist attraction and a local landmark on the outskirts of the small town known as Hucumba Hot Springs. Originally built to commemorate the area's rough pre-highway history, the tower houses a small museum filled with artifacts and oddities of California's history, including our region's Native American, Spanish, and pioneer past. The top floor of the tower is an observation deck, with a coin-fed telescope that provides a breathtaking view of Imperial Valley and the Anza-Borrego Desert, though now somewhat marred by a wind farm. In 1950, a gift shop was added around the base of the tower. The shop still operates today and is filled with an eclectic mix of items such as geodes, gems and minerals, vintage postcards, historic and travel books on our region, arts and crafts items such as handmade Tecate tiles, onyx bookends, musical instruments, carved animal sculptures, and more. Roaming this area of the tower are the owner's many friendly dogs that add to the rustic charm of the location. You can also get a workout pumping a player piano while listening to old-time tunes. While I was there, the wind was gusting. It was a bit chilly and I wished I had a better coat when I reached the top. The owner says this is atypical though and that it is warm and sunny most days. The proprietor, Ben Schultz, has many colorful stories on East County's history, culture, and colorful characters, having operated the site for many years. Boulder Park at the Desert View Tower was created in 1933 by an unemployed engineer, Merle Ratcliffe, who was out of work during the Great Depression. He sculpted reptiles and fanciful animals out of the huge stone boulders. I didn't get a chance to tour these, which will be an adventure for another time.
Welcome to Vines and Wines on the East County Magazine Show, bringing you news to savor about our region's fast-growing winemaking industry. This is Miriam Raftery with East County Magazine's Vines and Wines. Those Ramona winemakers are at it again. Eight members of the Ramona Valley Vineyard Association just picked up 25 medals at the prestigious New York Finger Lakes International Wine Competition. The competition was robust, with almost 4,000 entries from over 900 wineries in all 50 states, plus 26 different nations around the world. The judges included international sommeliers, educators, winemakers, writers, and top industry experts. Among our local Ramona winemakers, Cactus Star Vineyard and Highland Valley Vineyard won double gold medals for their estate Tempranillo and Barbera wines, respectively. Other winning vintners included Altipiano, which won four awards, Castelli Family Vineyards, which got two silvers and a bronze, Mahogany Mountain Vineyard and Winery, which received a silver medal, Papaya, with three medals, Ramona Valley Vineyard and Winery, with two silvers and a bronze, and the Wolf and Rose Winery, named for the owner's love of raising dogs and flowers as well as wine grapes, which took home a total of six medals, ranging from gold to bronze. Proceeds from the competition are all for a good cause, benefiting Camp Good Days and Special Times, a nonprofit that helps children with cancer or other life-threatening challenges around the world. If you would like to check out some of those award-winning wines in our local back country, you can find a map and more information at RamonaValleyVineyards.com. This concludes today's episode of East County Magazine's radio show. We extend our appreciation to the Heartland Coalition, our parent nonprofit, and to KNSJ 89.1 FM, broadcasting from the heart of East County and Descanso. We extend our appreciation to our sound technicians, Leon Thompson and Ed Barena, and to our producer, Miriam Raftery. We also thank the musicians who provided music for our show, Laura Preble, Jim Hannibal, Corey Clement, Donnie Gentile, A.K. Jules, Brian Boykel, Royalty Free Music, Frank Nora, Kevin McLeod, Blues 3 Music, and Pond 5. We also thank the County of San Diego for a community enhancement grant to support our Destination East County segment. If you have story ideas or would like to underwrite the East County Magazine radio show, please contact editor@eastcountymagazine.org or call 619-698-7617. We'll be back soon for another edition of East County Magazine's radio show.